Welcome to episode 21 of Never Iron Anything podcast. Podcast been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown. My name is Tony Esmond, writer of the Monster Spotters Club. Tony Osmond is a movie star and Atomic Hercules. Today we've got two episodes coming your way. That's a bit bizarre, isn't it? Neither of them are perhaps what you're used to. This morning we're going to focus in on a comics publisher. It's not this morning now, it's this afternoon. Is it this afternoon yet? Not yet. Focusing on a comics publisher very close to mine and others' hearts, comics like Gallant and Amos, Hopper, Detective of the Strange, How to Make Comics with Springworth, and The Spark. I'm lucky to have the publisher here on the line with me. Hello, Aaron Rackley.
Hello, Tony.
This is weird because nobody puts their camera on, but you've got your camera on. I can see you. That's a bit strange.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd give you a surprise.
Yeah, you did text me to say you were dressed, so that's quite nice.
I wish you'd have put clothes on.
You don't. It's already going that way, isn't it? This is a kid's imprint. Keep it clean. So, Aaron, how did... what was your sort of comic... I've never asked you this. What was your sort of comics origin story? So, from a sort of point of view of what did you read, what influenced you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting one, actually. I remember very young, because obviously I grew up in the 90s. So I was around in that 90s boom. And I just read a lot of Hulk and Fantastic Four, pretty much. And then I remember one day getting given Silver Surfer issue 6.
Was it Marshall Rogers run? Was it Marshall Rogers back then? Was it? Oh, I can't remember.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah. So volume 2.
Yeah, 87 run. Yeah.
Okay.
And I just remember. Because I don't remember a lot about my childhood, to be honest, but I remember that part of it. And then I couldn't afford a lot of comics. So we just, I grew up with three brothers, one sister. I had to think about that then. And we just got like little things, little treats every now and then. And yeah, so eventually it went to the side, but it weren't until... I was back in hospital. Well, when I was in hospital a while back, which is part of the story of starting First Spot Books and stuff. I just started reading again. Someone kindly brought me in the Beano, and then I had an iPad and I just started reading tons of stuff and then getting people to bring stuff back. Because before then, I'd been working for a little while and picked up a few Image comics. I was really into Jonathan Hickman.
Oh, cool.
Early stuff. So Nightly News and what was it? Patch Romana, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Really love the art style. But yeah, it went until I was back in hospital that I started reading again. And then I remembered the Silver Surfer comic. And I just went to my mum. I just went on eBay and went, look, they've got this whole run of 307 episodes. What was it? 300. Well, I can't remember how many episodes now. Two issues. And then I said, do you want to go halves with me?
Right, because your mum clearly wanted those Silver Surfer.
Yeah. And I remember, her feeling guilty because I was in hospital. So that was obviously a good good one. So, yeah, so I got a load of these comics. And that started the downward spiral, really, of reading.
That's a nice little find as well on eBay. That's a nice little run to read.
Yeah,
it certainly started off really well.
Yeah. I think there was like one or two missing that, they happened to be the issues around like the Infinity Gauntlet and stuff like that.
Right.
So I had to end up buying those and they were stupidly inflated because of the movies and Marvel.
Oh, okay.
So like I think it was like two issues I needed to get to complete the whole run. And I ended up having to spend like 30, 40 quid to get them.
Yeah.
And it was just,
And then you sort of slowly started building up the John Buscema stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, I've got, God, how many of them do I have? I think I've got 6 at the moment.
Okay. It's not a long run, is it?
No, but the cost of those spirals.
I'd love to have an issue one. That's my grail issue. I've got a poster of it on the wall next to me here. Yeah, it's a great issue. I've got it in reprint and stuff. That'll do me for the moment. I'm not greedy. Yeah.
No, I've got that in reprint so many times.
Yeah. So that transitioned into, now you mentioned there, we won't focus on it too much, I hope you don't mind me mentioning, but you then went into hospital for a while, is that right?
Yeah, so I've been very open about what happened. It's on the blog and everything. But essentially, I caught a blood cancer, leukemia, which is quite rare for an adult to get it.
Okay.
Get it.
And
I was
right.
21 when I got it. I think 22.
Right.
Can't remember. Don't even know how old I am now, so don't worry about it.
45.
And yeah, so I was in the hospital for that. I think I was in for a whole 3 months. With a 50-50 chance at one point of making it past 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
And then over the course of another year, I was basically at home, just taking copious amounts of drugs and trying to fight it off. And eventually it was all fine. It's all gone now. I've had plenty of yearly checkups and everything.
Good.
As part of being in hospital, when I came out, I wanted to kind of help give back to the hospital, really, as I hope most people do when their life is saved by the nurses and doctors.
Yeah.
And so I thought, how could I give back? And I'd done a little one of those like 5K run type fundraising things, and donated that directly to the charity of the hospital, which was the Royal Marsden Charity. I think it's called just Royal Marsden Charity.
Yeah.
And but then I thought, I have this weird love-hate relationship with charities, which is an interesting one, is that I love giving to charities, but I hate not knowing where money goes. So I wanted to give back in a way that I knew exactly where that money was going to impact.
Yeah.
So thought about it for a long time, and then eventually I was like, do you know what? Comics helped me when I was in hospital. Why don't I give comics to the hospitals? And so I reached out to the Royal Marsden, and I reached out to a few other hospitals, and turned out, I think it's got a bit easier now, but back then, well, it's 3 years ago, it was a lot harder to just give comics to someone in a hospital, and just like hand them over, because every comic had to be approved by like a committee.
We've had this chat before, haven't we? So literally they wouldn't, it's not like the barbers where you could just drop a pile of comics, you know, but they had to make sure there wasn't new, you know, naked bodies and violence and drug use and stuff like that, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, I've later heard that it's totally different for books, because books are usually from a reputable publisher. They are normally stringently checked and all that kind of stuff. And if you get in a children's book, you generally know it's safe for children.
Right.
I think with that comics, it's not, you know, there's not that association of it being, well, comics are adults, right? Are they really for children? That kind of thing.
Yeah. That's true, actually. There's a realisation there somewhere by some people in this country, isn't there? Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So, in the end, I just scrapped that idea. I was like, too much red tape. And what else can I do? And then I thought, do you know what? Let's give kids everything they would need to create their own comic, so that they just had something fun to do, even if it was for an hour of a day.
Right.
Because I was an adult in hospital for 3 months. I had TV, laptop, everything, and I was bored. I think I gained 20 kilograms in weight from watching non-stop food channels and eating copious amounts of cookies and coke because of that.
Right, okay.
I'd be wide awake because I couldn't sleep because of steroids, so I'd be watching 2 o'clock Barefoot Contessa, making some brownies on TV, and then that's it.
I'm not aware of that one.
But so in the end, I just started a quick Kickstarter. I was like, look guys, I just need £1,000. I want to make a 100 comic making kits. It's just going to be like some materials, and I've got a good friend Dan Harrison to just draw up some like how-to guides.
And then
that was basically it. And I think, and then this is where I have to say thank you to you guys. I remember just coming out to, what was it, London? What's the one? Oh, it's not MCM. What was the other one? London
Super Film Comic Con.
Super Comic Con. That was the one. And then I remember you being there, and I introduced myself. I had my Little Heroes T-shirt on, and I said, "This is what I'm doing."
Was I there?
Yeah, because you gave me a quick interview. Was it you, or I think it was you, or?
It was me, wasn't it? That's right. Yeah, it was me.
They gave me a quick interview. Yeah. And then it just spiraled from there. And that £1,000 ended up becoming a grant from the National Lottery.
Oh, nice.
we're now 3 years later and we're still going. You know, it's not a massive charity. It's not something I can do full time, but it's going well, and we're able to send out, like, we just sent out 20 more to two different hospitals this week. And we're currently building a lot more to get them out, because especially at the moment with obviously coronavirus and everyone else being locked in.
Yeah, that's true, man. There's no better time.
Yeah. And then
so I suppose my next question would be, how did that transition? So that transitioned into FairSpark, which sells comics in order to support the charity. So it's almost like a funding stream on its own. Is that right?
Yeah. So there's two reasons it came about. One was a business decision, really, for the charity. So I started doing Kickstarters for fundraising anthologies, which I know you've been part of, and some of your other great listeners and people in the community have been part of.
So they're the Little Heroes anthologies, those ones.
Hero anthologies. And what I realized at the end of the year was, on the balance sheet of the charity, it looked like we were spending copious amounts of money investing in the creation of these magazine, like these books,
right,
you know, get printed, stuff like that. But in reality, it wasn't, because Kickstarter was paying for it, you know, in a way, but on a balance sheet, that's what it looked like.
Right.
And because your balance sheet for a charity is public and we publish it on a website, everything, I didn't want it to look like we spent more money making anthologies than we did on actually sending out kits.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, we weren't actually spending money making those anthologies, but because the Kickstarter was funding it.
Yeah.
So it was never part of the fundraising money, but it just looked like that on paper, which is annoying. So in the end, I decided, you know what, I'll start up a company that just handles the creation of these anthologies and then donates the money to the charity.
Right.
So then the only money that's ever coming out of the charity is always on the comic kits. So that's how FairSpark Books started. And then essentially it was like, well, I have this company now that's now making comics for kids. And a lot of people really interested. And I started to hear about people saying, I wish there was more comics for kids. I wish, like, my kid loved your anthologies. These characters are amazing. Can I read more? You know, we were getting good feedback.
Yeah.
And then I read into it more. You know, I had chats with people like you and quite a few other people that I know that are in the small press scene, and they were all saying the same thing. Yeah, there are comics out there for kids, but it's only a couple of the major publishers do them, and they're always around major franchises, and there's not a lot of, like, introductory ones and different ages, and especially ones that we could potentially send to kids in hospitals and things like that, because a lot of them were, like, these violent ninja ones and whatnot. So I just reached out. The first person I reached out to, actually, was Rob Barnes.
Love
because
Rob.
Because I remember just...
There you go.
Yeah, Rob from Gallant Amos. Because I remember just seeing his work on Twitter, and he was doing the webcomic Gallant Amos, and I just said, you know, this is an amazing, the artwork is amazing, the storyline is so funny, how are you not published?
So those that haven't heard of Gallant Amos is he a Viking, or is it, he's a sort of medieval Viking.
One's Viking, the other one's a dragon,
and they sort of just, excuse my French, they sort of fuck around a bit, don't they, and get in trouble a lot. They get kidnapped by a spaceship. They fight snowmen. There's all sorts of things going on with them, isn't there? But it's so well done. He's got a bit of an old school animation style to his work, isn't he? There's a clean line element to it, what I really like. I think everyone sort of really warms to Gallant Amos. They're quite likeable, and he's good with dialogue with them as well. They're very sort of buddy cop snarky, aren't they? You know.
Yeah, 100%. And again, he done a four. I think it was a four-pager in the first anthology we did.
Okay, right.
So again, that's how I knew him. So I reached out and I just said to him, look, I've got this idea to start up this publishing house focused on kids' comics, where a portion of all the sales go back to our charity. Would you take a chance and let us publish your book?
Nice.
And
good.
the answer was, well, essentially, they're online for free. Go for it.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, and we're 6 issues in with Gallant Amos, 2 issues in with another series he's doing called Hopper Detective of the Strange, and that started off Fair Spark Books, essentially.
Yeah, so
that's the story.
For those who don't know, Hopper is a rabbit, a bit like Kolchak, monster hunter kind of character, gets himself in hijinks and is basically out there looking for mysteries to solve. He's like a private investigator, but a rabbit, so it's a anthropomorphic comic. Yeah, my favourite thing from Rob, and I really like Gallant Amos as well, I think, is Hopper. Has come along.
Yeah.
So backtracking a little bit there. So what you've done is you've created a, from the sort of history point of view and the motivational point of view, you've created a comics imprint in order to use the money that we make from that, or you make from that, to finance the kits as well as doing it just from donations. Because donations will dry up, you know, sort of thing. There's so many charities out there. It's difficult times. But if you've got a product to sell that you can make money off that people enjoy, then that's the idea. Is that right?
Yeah. At the end of each year, we so there's two aspects. Because the business also sells any books that we make for the charity, so all the anthologies, How to Make Comics, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anything that's sold by that is a Fairspark, that is a Little Heroes direct book.
Yeah.
100% profit is always to the charity.
Right, bro.
And then anything else at the end of the year, we calculate how much profit the company has made at the end of the year. And then we take a percentage of that and give it to the charity.
So speaking of really great comics, you mentioned, let's rewind a second there. You mentioned the totally amazing How to Make Comics with Springworth.
Oh, yeah, I know about that one. Yeah.
So we're, but it says Fair Sparks, but we're a Little Heroes book. So that's for those who don't know, it's a sort of activity comic that I wrote. It didn't take me long. And then Andy beautifully illustrated, Andy Hanks, the Hankmeister.
Yeah.
The master, beautifully illustrated, and it is sort of you draw scenes as part of the storyline, which is how it is making a comic. So you're kind of, you fill in what the monster looks like, and you fill in what the character's equivalent of the Batcave looks like. And Springworth is a butler, and he works for a superhero, and the superhero's got 2 sidekicks, and he works for him, and he sort of keeps him safe. He's the only sane voice in the world, the typical sort of Alfred the Butler kind of character, but. Because Andy likes drawing robots, he's a robot with quite a cool moustache. I had absolute blast writing this, man. And there's more to come of it. We were just talking about it just before we came online. But really good. Really good fun.
Yeah, and that magazine is in every single kit that we send out.
Oh, nice. So, I didn't realise that. Oh, good stuff, man.
As well as we also donate however many issues of the Spark that are out as well.
Okay. With the lovely, we'll get on to the Spark in a second. So how else did you go about sourcing creators? So we've talked about, you know, the brilliant signings, you know, like we were like myself and Rob would be like the high, you know, the high value signings at Chelsea. How do you go about sourcing creators? Do you wait for people to come to you? Because we do get a few submissions, not that many, you know.
Yeah, we well, this week we actually put up a post to be like, we are open for submissions. Please definitely reach out.
Yeah.
Because we want to expand what we're offering. But up until now, it's been a bit of a see what's around on Twitter, see what people were working on. Like, I do this, well, I try to do it every week with Sam Hardacre, a online chat where we just, a few of us comic creators all just chat on Skype. And, you know, it's open to anyone. During the lockdown, it just started the lockdown, and you know, he was always working on a comic, for example, a kid's comic, and you know, through that conversation, I spoke to him about how is he going to publish it, is he going to publish it, is it just for fun? And then, you know, he was saying, well, you know, if you're interested, I can send you it over. And you know, that led me to have conversations with you and our other editor Tom, and that's one way we do it. It's just me being out there listening or going to conventions, which don't happen at the moment, and looking around tables. But
now have a chat about who's good at the moment, who's going to be good for it. You know, there's a lot of great artists out there, but not everyone is quite right for the Spark or even kids comics, essentially, you know?
Yeah, I think it takes a totally different approach when you're writing something for a younger audience.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a skill that I don't know if a lot of writers or even artists have attempted before.
Yeah.
And so it can go either way. You can see some artists who are doing amazing work but can't translate it to a younger audience, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But then you get some people who 100% can do it.
Yeah. And there's a difference. I think people need to realize there's a difference between the animation. If you're in animation, there's a difference between being able to put an animation style on a page and the difference between a good comic page.
Yeah.
I think the prime example of that is both Andy and Rob. They're not drawing as if they're drawing a panel in an animation. And there's a stiffness to that sometimes. You know, there needs to be movement in the image. There needs to be a more defined line to it. The colouring is slightly different than for animators. I think that's a big distinction. I see a lot of attempts at all ages, and I find them just sort of a Photoshop colouring mess often. You know, it needs to be, how can you put it? It needs to be something that the eye of a child or an adult can pick out simply, you know, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Rob does some really good tricks, like in Hopper Detective the Strange. He'll always use movement lines,
right,
to show that something's happened in a panel.
Yeah.
But like, I've just opened it up randomly to like the middle page of the second issue, and there's a bit where Hopper's literally walking down the street, looking around, trying to find out what's happened.
Right.
And he literally has just two heads looking in different directions on body. Stuff like that. That just.
Yeah, so there's a language of comics is different from the language from animation, isn't there? People need to realise that. Yeah, and there's a difference between the language of video games as well that people don't get. I think sometimes, I mean, the amount of things I see that are sort of scrolling, you know, no, it don't work, man. It's got to be, it's about personality, it's about character, you know.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a real skill in cartooning, I think, is a skill that's being lost a little bit, the cartooning skill, as opposed to like drawing a character that will look good in a video game, for example, you know.
I think a distinction I always try and say to people is, what you got to remember is, if I or you buy a comic and we get home and we've opened it up and we don't like it, we're probably going to still read it at the fact we paid so much money for it.
Yeah.
And we understand the value of that money, whereas a child is going to pick up that book, open up the first page, and if they don't like it, they're just going to throw it down.
Yeah.
And they don't care about how much their parents have paid for it or where it came from. And you don't want it to be too precious because they're going to throw it around. They're going to screw it up. And it's just it's a totally different. You have to draw them in on every panel.
Yeah.
You know, you can't. It's really hard. You can't build up some panel stories like you do in other comics where over the course of four pages, you know, you're building up this suspense. Like they don't. They get it, but don't like it.
I agree completely, man. And with something we've talked about a lot in the past is you need to drop them in the action.
You know,
we don't need four pages of them talking about it, sitting on about on a couch or, you know, in a classroom or wherever it's going to be. You need action in a kid's comic. People don't seem to grasp that either. You know, cutesy will take you far enough, but it won't invest you in the story. Okay, these bears or whatever you're going to draw, these unicorns, whatever they're going to be, that might be cute looking, but they're not going to draw you into the personality unless they have something to say and something happens to them.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It's interesting as well. Yeah. The just quickly, I've got a few questions. Now, one that obviously needs tackling is there's a big conversation going on at the moment about payment. You are a charity. I personally, I've written, 8 stories, 9 stories for you now, and I never get paid because it's a charity. Yeah. Now, I appreciate that some people wish to get paid, and do you do it on a sort of specific deal-by-deal basis where it's a percentage of sales and then percentage of reprints or that sort of thing, do you? Or?
Yeah, so the only thing we pay outright at the moment is for the Spark, because that's a personal endeavour by the company itself.
Right, okay.
So we reach out to every artist gets paid the same on every page.
So it's like a specific page rate, isn't it?
Yeah, and they know, and we tell it up front to everyone.
Yeah.
But the way that we work with our creators at the moment is, usually you have to come to us with a book that you're willing to take to the end.
Right.
Without us paying for anything. What we will pay for is the whole printing and marketing of that book. And then the deal the percentages of profit is based on a split share between us, the publisher, and the creative team.
Yeah.
But that does not come into effect until the costs of the printing has been paid.
Okay, right.
And that's just really because what we're trying to do is build up this system where the risk is on both of us. So I have the risk of upfronting the cost of the print and the marketing and trying to get your book out there. And you have the risk of creating that book and, you know, spending the time to do it. Because something else I've noticed happen is creators like to do this thing where they get paid and just walk off.
Yeah.
And they won't mention the book. They won't even acknowledge it on their social medias. And they're already willing to, like, be on their Twitter showing commissions, how much they're getting, like, come and buy this, come and do that.
Yeah.
But they won't mention their books.
Yeah.
And I feel like doing it this way is fair for both parties. And it encourages you as a creator as well to not only get to advertise the book yourself as well as us, but engage with that whole environment. But also, hopefully, it brings you into that family of the creators we have, because what we do is we all end up working together. You know, all of our creators are always retweeting each other's yeah. books. Always, it just becomes
WhatsApp
a collaborative
group and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm trying to build a more of a system when we're all in it together. You know, I do videos on YouTube and around how I run the charity and the Facebook. Everything's always open.
Yeah.
And I do that because I want everyone to come along on that journey. You know, I don't want Fair Spots books to be something like, oh, Aaron over there is making money sitting in a corner doing it.
Yeah.
I just want everyone to be earning out of it. I want everyone to reap the rewards of it. That's why it's not a non-profit, because obviously it needs to make profit to keep running. But that's why we give a lot of our profit to the non-profit of Little Heroes, because it's not about making millions for us. It's not even about making hundreds of thousands. You know, it's just about creators getting their work out there. We're able to make books for children to read and hopefully bring them into our world, that eventually means they'll be buying the other books that you will make later on down the line when they're older, but also helping us carry on that mission of Little Heroes of just getting those kits out to kids who...
Yeah, it's that double thing there, man. I don't want to call it recruitment because it makes it sound a little bit seedy and a little bit sleazy, but we're recruiting kids into the hobby, aren't we? You know what I mean? So that's what we want to do. And, you know, comics are fun. Comics have been, you know, a lifetime hobby for us. And the kids will get a lot out of it. And to double enforce that by saying that there's money going to kids in hospital because of them, these kids or their parents buying it and reading them. It's a great idea. Yeah, so I just sort of tackle that because there's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
If you want to work for the Spark for free, feel free. Do you know what I mean? If you want to work for free, then down to you, my friend. But I do, and I have a blast writing it. And there's something to be said about knowing you're doing something well and actually having a comic in your hands that, you know. I know we're going to say the horrible E-word exposure again, but if you're doing work for a charity and that charity is producing comics, there's no greater exposure or version of exposure than that, I think. You know. So how do you... How do you work? So you found a creator. Is it the experience I've had with you so far is it tends to be a sort of case-by-case basis. Sometimes people, if they're working in a second job, are going to take a while to get a book done. So sometimes we won't sign, you know, hire them on a contract until they've got that completed. Deadlines are something that people love to hear swooshing past them. Is that the quote from Douglas Adams, I think? Yeah. Yeah, I always like a deadline. I like the noise it makes when it swooshes past me, whatever that phrase he says. And then sometimes people are hired just to do one or two page things for the Spark. That's kind of the thing, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, it's case by case because we don't have a publishing schedule because, as I said, we don't pay anyone up front. So a lot of the time it's, when do you think you can get this done?
Yeah.
Let us know. We'll keep in contact because we obviously assign an editor to you, so they're going to be there with you the whole time. And if you're regularly keeping in contact with them, it's going to help with the book overall. Ideally, we try to make sure that you've got most of your book ready if you can help. We've been burnt a few times on deadlines, which is why we take a different approach now of trying not to announce stuff too early and things like that. And we've been burnt by a couple of Kickstarters, so we're trying to be a bit careful about that as well now. So we have a rule going forward that we don't do any Kickstarters anymore unless the book is ready to go to print, so that we don't have anyone waiting around for an extended period of time. And we try and make sure that we don't put pre-orders up on the site until at least, you know, a couple of months before the book's out as well.
Yeah, I think that's important, man. I think that's something. Every time I look at my Kickstarter app on my phone, I think about this. You know, there's naming no names. There's a couple of people I've been waiting 2 years for a project through from. You know, and so I'm waiting 2 years for your book. You know, it's not my place to push you, but I did just send you £50. You know, two years ago. You know, there's not that many other things where you can send someone money and then wait for 2 years for it to be to come back. Yeah, and I think we've never been that bad, but we've been maybe a month out, you know, and I can see that it will get some people's goat, you know.
Yeah, we've had one that's taken it's the current one is Ella Upgraded. I've actually been sending them out for the last month because of being in lockdown. I can only go to my local post office, and they get stressed if you take more than 10.
Right, yeah, I've had mine. To be fair, I've had mine for about a week.
They've been going out steadily, and we're just waiting to hear back about the hardback version of that.
Okay,
they'll be going out, but they are going out. Now I'm really happy with that.
Good stuff. So what's Ella Upgraded? Tell us what that one is.
So Ella Upgraded is a story about 11-year-old. Who is in an accident, and her brother saves her life by putting a game box console. Right. I think the writer has taken a liberty on the name there, and basically infused it with her brain.
Right.
So now, anytime Ella puts a cartridge of a certain game, like a ninja fighting game or something like that, she can basically download all of that and become it.
Right.
So she can become a ninja, or, you know, if she was Mario, she could probably become Mario or something like that.
Yep.
It's a really good book. It's 60 pages graphic novel. It's $10.99 at the moment. And yeah, it's by it's written by Dan Whitehead, and it's the artist is PR Dedilis. I always think I'm gonna say that wrong.
I don't know. I've got it in front of me. Yeah.
Colours by Abby Ballmer and letters by Jim Campbell.
Oh, okay, obviously. Abby Ballmer and Jim Campbell, both favourites. Yeah, big favourites, regulars.
It's a one story volume done. There is talks of doing another one.
Yeah.
But I really love it. I think it's a great story.
Yeah.
Be fun. The artwork, I love it. It's very bright and very. I like to say the word scratchy, but I never think that means.
Yeah, scratchy always, for me, is a bit Sienkiewicz or something like that, you know. But I know what you mean.
You know, the lines are not completely solid.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, not quite clean line style. Yeah, good.
But that's the latest book we have out alongside, obviously, the regulars of Hopper.
Let's circle back to the last question about making kids comics. So. The last question I've got about that is covers. How many books have you had out now? 20 books?
So
let's say between 20 and 30. What makes a good cover to you, Aaron? So you got a kid's comic, you want the kid, because to me, I'm going to preempt slightly what you're going to say. A kid's comic needs to be attractive to the kid first, and then for the parent to pick up. Because if you're a parent, you go in a shop and it's got loads of kids books in it, they could pick anything up, they don't really know what they're looking at, but the kid is the one who's going to point at stuff.
Yeah,
so you have to make it. What characteristics do you think are useful?
So we've actually got some data on this, actually.
Okay.
From stuff we've released and how pre-orders usually shape up and things like that, and then obviously we have general feedback.
Yeah.
And I know that you know this because you hammer it home all the time, you know, being an editor for us as well, is action and drama on that cover.
Yep.
There needs to be just something going on. For example, Hopper Detective of the Strange issue 1 literally has the character being almost attacked by a big printing press.
Right. Yep.
And then there's a big thing, big on the breaking news, Hopper pressed. Like, there is action going on. you know, on Gantt Namos, he's got Gantt Namos running down a street with this big blob monster, like, chasing after him.
Yeah.
You know, we got a Spark. We're working on some Spark covers at the moment, and we got one through yesterday, which is this person, I can't remember, is it a robot or anything, but they're literally holding a basket of washing.
Yeah, Springworth.
And there's a massive monster behind with just this, like, a sock hanging out of its mouth. It's,
yeah,
it's drawing you in. That kid is going to see it on that stand and just go, what is that? What's happening there?
That's exactly right, man. What is happening there? There needs to be some jeopardy. There needs to be some excitement. There needs to be some action. And I think that one, me and Andy and you and Tom Spark and Tom Stewart, one of the other editors, our pal, we've all been talking about what makes a good cover, haven't we? It's been a big conversation. And we had a big chat about it. And you've commissioned, I think, another two covers, because we needed them for the Kickstarter, for the next few Sparks that are upcoming. And Andy Hanks went away, and he came back, and he gave us sort of a presentation of four versions of covers, all very different. And we all chose the same one independently. I think we all typed pretty much at the same time. On the WhatsApp group we're on, and he went away and he came back, and I said to you, that's a cover. That's what I mean by a cover. It's got Springworth in the foreground, and behind he's sort of sorting a basket full of washing, and behind him is a huge sort of monster looking to eat him, and hanging out of his mouth is a sock. Now what you got there is you've got story content, you've got excitement, you've got Springworth is in trouble. The kids are going to go, oh my God, what's happening there? What is the next thing that happens after that? And that was just brilliant. I absolutely loved that cover, man. I'd have that on my wall. It's so good. Yeah, really good stuff.
And I think that's a big distinguish between a younger audience and an older audience. Like, we will go to a comic shop and, you know, we've got all our favourites. Like, I've got a Silver Surfer, you know. So you're going to just see... For me, I'm just going to see Silver Surfer flying across the cover. I'm in.
Yeah.
Right? That's me. I'm in. You know, my favorite Silver Surfer is number four on the first run, where he's fighting off... is it four?
Oh, yes. I think you're right. Love that cover, man.
Where, like, four's booming down on him with his hammer. Silver Surfer's flying up towards him. You know, there's that dramaticness to it that's just like, oh, my God, what is this about? I want to find out about that. Fight. Why are they fighting? These are two good guys. What's going on?
Yeah.
And you don't see that a lot anymore. And that'll be me ranting a little bit, is that a lot of these covers now are just like, who are the characters standing still on the cover?
Yeah, stock footage. It's almost like they've got a picture of Batman standing on the top of a building. Right, let's use that for issue 1080 or something. You know, it's like that. Well, no, that's not how it works. That's the reason that thought bubbles and word balloons used to work so well in covers back in the day.
Oh, no, and I've been thinking about some of those at the moment. I want some back.
You got Thor shouting, give me back my hammer. That's all you need. Yeah. That's it, you know. Yeah.
But, yeah, and I think that brings me to my other thing about covers. I don't like it when the artist who does the cover's not inside.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just... I don't like it because a lot of us will pick a cover or a book just based on the cover. I know they don't say don't do that, but you do.
Yeah, of course you do. Yeah.
And there's nothing worse than having a really enticed, brought in by a cover and then open it up and going, what the fuck is this compared to that?
There's a bit of that going on in the small press these days. I think there's a lot of anthologies that hire pro artists to do their covers because they know it's a good draw, and they do it for that reason, you know. And they can maybe only afford a cover by that artist rather than the strip inside. So they hire the big artist. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always been a bugbear of mine over the years. It's always been a problem. You buy something with a burn cover and inside it was George Dusker. God bless him. But, you know, there's always that problem. Definitely.
Mm.
Now, let's segue that interesting point to talking about the Spark.
Yeah.
The Spark is third issue's about to hit the shops, I'm going to say. Oh, it's ready.
We're just going to... sending it off to print early next week.
Lovely.
Hopefully.
Brilliant stuff.
Just waiting back on one more page of art.
Cool. Good. Is that me just drawing around something for it? Good.
Yep.
So the first issue is, I've just been chatting to him today. Nick Brokenshire, our pal, did, again, Tension. He sent me three versions of the cover, the pro that he is. We wanted something, and that's got some quite scary monsters on it. It's actually got some
100%.
Scary monsters on it. It's in the style of Dan's work from Inside. Dan does the main story inside, Dan Harris, who's brilliant. in this, so totally suited for this story. And he apes the style there really well. And what you've got, he didn't copy it, but he uses that similar sort of style. He's got three monsters attacking two sort of spacemen, or a spaceman and a space alien. Tension, and it's for our target audience. What would you say the age is on our target audience?
So we've aimed the magazine from 7 upwards, because we want to include adults, but generally it's 7 to like 13.
Yeah.
14, because we say that we're in between, like, we're before 2000 AD,
and after the Phoenix sort of thing.
Yeah, and after the Phoenix, we're like in between those two.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this is quite scary, so kids are drawn to that. You know, that's why 2000 AD was successful. Kids are drawn to the scariness. So we got that. Go on, man.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, and that's one of the key features, is that you don't want to play down to them.
Yeah.
They
exactly.
Kids,
yeah.
A lot of the time want to seem older than they are.
Yeah.
So if you're aiming for a 7-year-old, don't draw for a 7-year-old, is essentially the rule.
Yeah, there's that Bowie Aim quote, isn't it? Older. Is it the David Bowie quote about don't play to the balcony?
Yeah.
Play something that's good. Yeah, never. I suppose the never pander is the phrase I always use. But so that's the first issue, which we're really, really pleased with. Distinctive, strong design. Second issue, my old mucker, Mr. Hunt, Vincenzo Hunt, and it's got Monster Spotters Club again. Problems.
Yeah.
There's again a monster attacking, monsters attacking, snake creatures attacking the professor and the two kids from Monster Spotters Club. It also reflects immediately what you get in the book, you get in the story. You get a professor who's a bit of a nitwit, but quite pompous, and you get two kids who are always pulling him out of trouble. And that's what you get. It tells a story again. That's what I like about it, you know. And we talk a lot on the Awesome Comics podcast about covers and the strength of a cover. And those two epitomise what makes a cover that will draw you in, to me. You know,
yeah.
Nice bright as well. Good sense of colours on them. Yeah, really good. And then the third one we've got is it what we're using on that one? Is it the guns cover?
Yeah, it's guns. Yeah.
So we're using it's like Top Gun in space. You know.
Oh yeah.
So what could be more exciting than that? Spaceships. It's like kids who've just seen a bit of Star Wars, or what is that? Yeah. Is that what they call it these days? This is sort of film about kids arguing. Is that Star Wars?
yeah. I think. Yeah.
And they're drawn to that, and that's good. And we've got another one by Tom Spark coming up, which is, he's gone full on Beano and Dandy on the cover.
We've got, for issue four, we have a Rob Barnes doing a cover, actually.
Oh, of course you do.
For issue four.
Yeah.
And that's the one where, so Rob Barnes is doing a series in the Spark where it's about two intergalactic delivery men.
That's right.
So they deliver fast food to people in space. Which, again, if you've read Gant Lemos humor, it's absolutely funny.
Yeah.
And the cover is them trying to deliver some food while there's again a big massive monster in the background.
Like a space creature approaching
ready to
them,
just to swallow them,
devour them. Yeah. And we played about a bit with that cover, didn't we? We had a chat with Rob.
Yep,
you had a
did.
Chat with Rob
yep.
about it. Bit of art direction. Rob totally knocked it out of the park on it. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
Then I think it's five. We've got Tom Sparks done a sort of crazy planet and spaceship approaching it, like full on Leo Baxendale, full on Beano, just really good quality stuff.
Yeah.
And then is it six is the Hankmeister?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got them already, man. They're all coming. They're all planned out. Look at that. Six issues, lovely covers. All of them to a cover would make a great print as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, talking of that, actually, is part of the Kickstarter that we're doing.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to move on to now. So we currently, when it launched as we record, 6 o'clock last night, was it?
Yep.
And it's now about 40%, isn't it? 40% done?
Yeah, it's almost halfway, actually. Let's have a look.
Yeah.
Well, I've got it up. Oh, no, I can't. That's my password.
Yeah. I love Tony. One.
Yeah, how did you? 42%.
Hey, there you go. Pretty good. Almost there, man. That's good for us, and bearing in mind there's a lot of people who have already bought it, so we're trying to reach out a bit to people who haven't seen it before. But it is a great fun kids comic. I call it the backseat element. If you're on a drive and you've got a kid on the back seat, this will shut them up for a good 40-50 minutes at least.
Yeah, 100%.
That's how we often discuss that, don't we, the backseat element to it. And I think that's an important thing in it. We've got I can't remember for the life of me. Bear in mind, I co-edit it with you. How many strips we got? So we got, is it three long form strips?
Yeah, so we usually try to have three long ones.
Yeah.
And we normally have one short one, which is a one pager.
Yeah.
But we've actually expanded a little bit since issue three.
Okay.
So we're keeping to three long form, but we're just switching them up a little bit so that you might not get the same series every release.
Okay.
Just so we can try and keep it regular. And then we've got a couple more extra one pages coming in. We've got one from Mark Jackson coming in as well.
Yeah, good stuff. He's good. Good lad.
Goons of the Galaxy, I think it's called, if I remember
That's
rightly.
Right. Yeah.
And he also does a little strip on the first page anyway, like a little three or four panel strip.
Yeah.
And since issue two, we're now Tom Spark and Andy have got regular couple of pages where Andy does a competition each issue where he asks you to, well, Springworth asks you to draw something.
He's a brand now. Look at this boy.
Yeah.
We branded the character.
I don't know how, but I must give Andy some money because
me and him, don't
Springworth has literally become the poster boy for Fezbart Books.
It's good. So for those that don't know, Springworth is kind of the Crypt Keeper, kind of the Tharg of this comic, where he sort of introduces everything. And that's one of the things I like about inside the front cover, is we have that communication with the reader, we have the contents, we have a little Gary and Larry by Mark Jackson. You got that sort of who's done the cover. It's good like that, and little things. The HMs, loads of puzzles and games inside. You know, you've got Springworth speaking to you. And what Andy's done is he's done Springworth in different kind of guises. So one, he's a school teacher.
I've got a really good Photoshop file with just hundreds of poses of
That's the thing, is interaction with the kids. So there's a maze, there's like a fact page that Tom Spark's done, there's the back, we've got sort of competitions and stuff like that going on, and that's the idea, isn't it? And if you draw a picture, Claudia, age four, Claudia is my niece, she's drawn a monster and sent it in. If you draw a monster and send it in, Tom has been redrawing them, hasn't he?
Yeah,
as monsters.
Yeah, he redraws them in his style. Yeah,
that's really good, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that page.
So
I think once someone sent a spaceman that had a pumpkin for a head.
Oh, good. So, okay.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
So in that we've got Shadows in issue two. Let's do issue two. So you've got Shadows, which is written, lettered by Aaron Rackley. Don't know who he is. Artist Dan Harris. Crash Orbit, created by Rob Barnes. The John Batten Chronicles, written by you. Artist Mike Dabrowski. And What's the Spotters Club, written by me, artist Vince Hunt. There you go. Yeah. So that's the sort of the Monster Spotters Club is the back page. We wanted that old school feel of having a one page strip on the back page. Next issue three does, I think one of the final lines is, "Oh no, my bum's on fire." One of my favourite lines ever in a comic. And we've added a little catchphrase to the kids in that one, which always makes me laugh. And the professor's always saying things like, "Ooh, mummy." And stuff like that. So that's kind of, and it makes a nice little, it's an A4 magazine. It's quite hard. I know that the print quality of the cover and stuff, it's, kids ain't going to rip it straight away either. You know, it's got a bit of sort of cardstock to it, shiny cardstock, which is nice. So explain the Kickstarter to us, Geezer. What's happening there?
Yeah, sure. So the Kickstarter is for issues 1 to 8. We just want to, because we have subscriptions on our website.
Yep.
We've had a few people already sign up for the subscriptions, but we wanted to try and reach more people.
Yeah.
And obviously one of the ways to do that is Kickstarter and Indiegogo, which I've been told is pretty good these days, but haven't actually tried it yet.
Yeah, I keep hearing great things about Indiegogo.
Might be trying it soon. It's basically the subscription levels, but on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So for the next 30 days, you can go to Kickstarter, you can subscribe. Pledge levels start at £10. They go up to, I think the biggest one is 60.
Right.
And they vary very much. So you can decide to go for 4 issues or 8 issues. And you can decide when you want those 4 issues. If you went for 4 issues, you could decide which 4 you want. So it could be 1 to 4, 2 to 5, you know, anything like that. As long as it's chronologically, so we can make sure we send them out to you in order. And then, so there's basically 4 or 8, and then there are different tiers on those based on what you can get, which is what brought me around to what you were saying earlier, because if you were to go, so let's say you go for four issues, which is £10 on the digital, £15 for the physical and digital. And you also get access to our whole back catalogue. So even later on, you'd get all of them, no matter how much going forwards. And then,
so sorry, just to clarify that. So if you, so if you come on, when you say back catalogue, you mean back catalogue of the Spark?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
of the other comics, so right?
You,
okay.
So yeah. if you got four issues, you said, oh, I want 5 to 8 or whatever that number is. I can't count off the top of my head. 5 to 8.
Yeah.
You would still get access to 1 to 4 on the website.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's physical. Then you can get like physical plus, for example, which is where you get all the physical items, digital items, but then you'd get each issue would come with a collector's badge and an A4 cover print. So you get a print of the cover without all the fancy stuff on it, just the artwork itself. And then there's another level on top of that, which is again coming back to this whole Fair Spark family type of thing, where you can get all of that stuff. So the badges, the cover, but then you get some stickers and you'll also get a book. The latest release of one of our comics.
Okay.
So, for example,
I'll get a Whopper or something like that.
Yeah, yep. Something like that. But for example, the sticker at the moment, one of the stickers we just got printed was the logo for Iron Eagle, which is in issue 3. So it's holographic as well. So it's really shiny.
that made Dan's day. A holographic sticker for his story, which is brilliant. It's so good. When he pitched it to us, we went, nah, that's a done deal. Get on with it, didn't we?
Yeah. I think he just gave us one line, didn't he?
It was
just like, dog fights in space. Yeah, done.
Yeah, kids will love that. Absolutely love it. Yeah, that's coming in 3, so we're excited by that one.
For me, I'm just saying it's a very simple Kickstarter. It's you're just buying for how you're just literally pitching for how many of the magazines you want.
Yeah.
And hopefully later on down the line, your subscription ends, we'll reach out and see if you want to renew. But at the moment, it's 4 issues a year. So
yeah, good stuff. Right, brilliant. Right, I'm going to read from one of our sponsors, and then we'll give out links, etc. So we can just pause there for this message from one of our sponsors. Is your life without focus? Are you sleepwalking through the day without any real purpose to your life? Are you unable to decide what is a good thing to do? And often, some of the things you do might well be bad, but you're not noticing that, are you? Or maybe you're feeling a little bit guilty about what you do after lights out, then you need to get a set of ridiculously twisted, confusing and hypocritical rules in your life. Why not become religious? There are loads of different, brackets, yet often very similar faiths you can follow blindly. Please send £31,000 to imaneffingidiot.org for a starter pack, or the devil will analyse you. Thank you for that. That's...
So that reminds me of a story of being at
London. This is when you became a Scientologist for a couple of years, isn't it?
Yeah, because I went to London Book Fair and then I saw a load of like really cool sci-fi books and I was like, oh crap, I recognise that name.
Oh, was it L. Ron Hubbard?
Yeah, it was Ron Hubbard. Ah. And then I thought, I've heard he's... I had this like dilemma inside my head of being like, I've heard these early science fiction books are really bloody good. So I had to go over there and then speak to a woman who I know was trying to recruit me.
Yeah.
And she was like, look, I'll give you this book for free. If you like it, you know, reach out to this email. We'll send you more books. And I was like, I'm being doctrined right now. I can tell.
I got doorstep, didn't I, at the No Brow stall at MCM. Skeezer spoke to me for ages, yeah. Peony was standing behind me going, what are you doing, Tony? Who is this person? I'm just becoming a Scientologist, Peony. Yeah. He gave me a thumb drive, which I'm never going to plug in my computer.
I'll plug it in, give me it.
Yeah.
But yeah, turns out a very good science fiction book, though.
Well, you say that. Invasion Earth was all right, I think. I think I read the first one, that. Battlefield Earth, just go on a bit. I'll be honest with you.
Did you see how many he had? It was like 50 or 60 books or something.
Yeah, I was looking on the site the other day after this geezer doorstepped me. Yeah, very good. Okay, so where can we find everything? Give us a little rundown. So the Kickstarter's live now, went live yesterday. We've got another 30 days?
32 days. Yeah,
okay.
I put it on 33 days just to be awkward. it's, if you just type in the Spark into Kickstarter, it'll come up. And then you can find Fair Sparks at fairsparkbooks.co.uk. And if you just type Fair Sparks into all social media, it will appear. Little Heroes is obviously littleheroescomics.co.uk.
Yep.
And that's the stuff that will just take you to everything about the charity.
Yep.
And you can donate. How you can donate
support. Button there. Yeah.
And then again on social media, search for Little Heroes. And I think the Twitter handle is Little Heroes Kit, I think, because someone had stolen Little Heroes Comics.
Right. Yeah.
Little Heroes. I can't remember what one they stole. And yeah, and that's it really. Fairspark Books or Little Heroes Comics. Search for them both.
Good stuff, man. Make sure you do it. Yeah, we're doing all right. Could do with a little bit of help. Make sure you retweet it to all your little whatever social. I don't know, what are you on, Snapchat or something? Put it on Snapchat, whatever that is. Tell all your friends.
Yeah, if you're in any family groups, anything like that, yeah. Throw it in.
Mum's Net, is that a dating site, is it? I don't know. Apparently.
I wouldn't know, Tony.
I'm gonna do the outro now. You ready?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Hopefully you got something out of that. You can find me normally over at neverironanything.blogspot.com. Buy my comics at neverironanything.bigcartel.com. You can find Atomic Hercules over at the Tribute Press site, which I'm sure you can find because I haven't written the link down. Make sure you head over to Kickstarter and pledge to The Spark. It is a great children's comic, which I co-edit with Mr. Ackley. Let's be clear about it. This is just one big advert. The proceeds go to supplies. I can see you on camera laughing. The proceeds go to help supply comics making kits to kids in long-term stay in hospital. So it's a worthy cause. Follow me on Twitter at EzoYes. And we've already found out where you can see. Thanks for coming on, Aaron. Brilliant stuff, man. We're going to do our fake goodbye now, and then we can continue talking. You ready? See ya.
Bye.